My name is Mike Love. I'm from here, from Oahu, born and raised here.
Where?
I grew up at the beginning of my life. I was down in Diamond Head, and then I grew up mostly in Hawaii Kai, and I've been in Kaneohe, Kahului'u, for the last 14 years.
Ah, yay! Did you ever go to college, Mike?
Nope, I barely made it through high school.
You're kidding me.
No, I just, my high school years were, the only reason I really actually graduated was just out of respect for my parents' wishes. I knew it would make them happy to see me graduate, but I already knew I wouldn't use it. And I was about halfway through high school, I really got just heavily into music, and I realized it was really what I wanted to do, what I wanted to focus my life on.
How did you do that? How did you fall into it?
Well, it just sort of made sense. I started playing in a band with a bunch of friends, and just started really getting into the passion. I think as a teenager, like, all these emotions blossom within you, and it's sort of like your emotions are kind of going at a mile a minute. And I think it's, as emotions go, it's really the most sort of extreme point in your life where you can be like in a dark, deep pit of depression one day, and then the next day you're like on top of the world and it's the best day of your life. And I think the depths of those emotions really get you in touch with what music is about, what music is for. It's kind of the soundtrack for all those emotions, right? And so, as I got into music, and I was like into, the Beatles and the Smashing Pumpkins and Pearl Jam and like all these bands that are, the music is very emotional. It's about love. It's about losing love. It's about passion. It's about revolution and all these things that are all the most meaningful things in life. And I got really heavily into all these kinds of music, and it just led me into doing music. And so I started, instead of going to school, I started not going to school and just, kind of cutting school and playing music. And a lot of times I would like cut school and go down to the guitar shop. And my friend Dan, who's now the owner of Dan's Guitars, was working at the time at Hot Licks, and we would go down there in the daytime when we were supposed to be in school, and Dan would probably just turn a blind eye to the fact that we were like 15 years old and probably should have been in school. But and so he would teach us stuff on guitar, and we'd just like kind of learn about electric guitars and cool stuff like that. So that was like what we were doing in high school, and it was I was supposed to be learning about, psychology and trigonometry and stuff that, may have helped me if I was going into a different career, and may even have helped me in music. But I sort of figured like I knew everything because I was a teenager. And so I was just, doing what I thought was important. But, when it came down to it, in the last few years of high school, the last few weeks of high school, I needed all of my credits to graduate, and I was getting 6 Fs.
Oh.
So I went to my teachers for the sake of my parents, and I said, just give me whatever work I need to do just to get a D. And so I got 6 Ds. And I graduated on the last day of school, I was failing my drama class, which, of course, I probably should have been getting an A in if I was like put my mind to it. But I was failing, and my teacher said, "Oh, if you sing a song for the class, I'll give you a passing grade." So I did. I got up in front of the class and sang, and she passed me, and that was like the final thing to graduate high school.
You were out of there.
Yeah.
What did you sing?
I sang "Imagine" by John Lennon. And there's another really amazing artist, Isaac. I don't know if you know him, but he's a local artist who's also a really amazing singer. And recently I was talking to him, and we both realized that we grew up, like, he's quite a bit younger than me, but we grew up on the same street, like, really, really close to each other. And we both graduated high school from Kaiser High School by singing a song for our drama teacher on the last day of school. He did the same exact thing that I did, and we were just like tripping out when we came to that realization.
Hey, both of you, I think, are doing quite well.
Yeah, we are.
So you were hooked. You started playing guitar. I mean, were you one of those, like, you know, really, like, nasally soul singer type, you know? Like,
I don't know.
This is
my
life.
You know, when I was in high school, I was really into, in the band I was playing in, I was playing bass guitar.
Ah.
And I was playing a lot of guitar on my own, but in the band I was playing bass. And so we had a singer. And at that point, I really loved singing, but I just didn't consider myself to be a lead singer. And we had a lead singer in the band, so I was writing a lot of the music, writing a lot of songs, and I would just, you know, sing the lead singer the song and teach him how I wanted to sing it, and he would sing it. And that pattern kind of continued for me for a while. And then I was in a band called Melodious Solutions with Tavana, who's another really amazing local artist and one of my best friends that I've known most of my life. And Tavana was kind of the main lead singer in our band, Melodious Solutions. And as I was writing more and more music, I kept on kind of teaching him the songs that I was writing, and he would sing some of the songs that I was writing. And I just sort of started to realize that he wasn't singing it exactly how I imagined it to be in my mind, and nobody ever had. And, you know, I realized I just had to kind of come out of my shell, because I've been singing my whole life and I've loved singing my whole life, but I never pictured myself as like a lead singer or a front man or, you know, to have that kind of presence. And I just realized at a certain point that I couldn't teach other people to sing my songs anymore. I was going to have to just learn how to do it myself. So I just really dug into teaching myself how to sing and trying to figure out, you know, I'd always heard people saying, you know, sing from your diaphragm. And I hear people doing, you know, a vibrato, and I never knew how to do it. And I didn't have anybody to teach me how to do it. So I just started trying to experiment with my voice and my technique and figure it out. And, you know, slowly I just kind of learned how to sing, and my technique got better and better, and it's still getting better. You know, I'm constantly trying to improve my technique, and I think over time it's just naturally kind of happened.
Excuse me. You know, I always wonder how people find their own voice.
Yeah, I wonder too. It's kind of, I mean, I wonder how a lot of things happened on this path that I'm on. I just kind of like sometimes I'll take a look back and see all of the, you know, countless small details that went into me being at the place that I am now. And, you know, say I was in a band and there was a really phenomenal singer that didn't even write songs and just, you know, loved to sing my songs, maybe I never would have even been a lead singer. And, you know, it's just, there's all these little things that happen, you know, that kind of show you the way, show you your path. And sometimes you don't even realize that it's significant, and something really insignificant can happen. But then you go back to it and you think, wow, actually, I probably wouldn't be a professional musician if that little thing didn't happen, if I didn't, you know, run into my old friend on that corner that day and he told me, hey, there's this gig over here, try it out, you know, or something like that. You know, it's like there's all these little things that happen that kind of make up your path. And, you know, to find your voice, I think it's just like there's only so much you can imitate the singers that you love. And I hear a lot of musicians and they, you know, they sound like maybe, you know, their favorite singer is John Legend, so they're trying to sound just like John Legend, or her favorite singer is Adele, so she's trying to sound just like Adele. And they really do. And you think, wow, that girl sounds just like Adele. But it's like nobody's going to buy an album of somebody that sounds just like Adele, because they'd rather just have Adele, You know, so there comes a point where you have to go, okay, I'm a composite of all of the singers that I love, but what do I have to say? And I think there's that, what comes into play there is just the honesty of being yourself. And that's the main thing that, you know, as a musician who's successful, you always get that question from musicians that are kind of coming up or just starting out or just starting to write songs. And they're like, what would be that one piece of advice? And it's always just, for me, you know, a thing I realized kind of early on about all the music that I love and about my success and what people really connected with for me is that honesty, you know. And Kurt Cobain is a, you know, when you listen to him, technically he's kind of a horrible singer, right? Or like, you know, the Ramones or you know, bands like, you know, like Mick Jagger or something, like, you know,
Bob
these
Dylan.
Singers that are, yeah, or Bob Dylan, singers that are kind of like technically from a you know, technical standpoint, they're not great singers, but they discovered the honesty of themselves in their own voice, and they weren't afraid to just sing the way that they felt, and they weren't afraid to not sound like somebody else, to sound like something new, to sound like something unique. And that really is, you know, the true beauty of the world that we live in, is that variety, that uniqueness that each one of us has. And when you find that and you nurture it, I mean, it's like a lifelong journey. You know, even Bob Dylan sounds different, quite a bit different now than he did when he was younger, you know. And whether or not his music's as popular now as it was then, I'm sure it doesn't really matter to him, because he's still being himself and he's still being honest with himself. And, you know, David Bowie changed the way he sounded over his one of the most successful musicians, you know, and he constantly changed the way he sounded because he was constantly reflecting and being honest with himself. And that's what made him, you know, continue to be popular and to continue to be successful, is he didn't just, you know, he wasn't just honest with himself and created something that connected with people because of that, and then got successful with it and then decided, well, I guess I'm just going to go with that, because that's what people like about me. No, he continued to challenge himself and continued to, you know, grow and to evolve. And I think that's part of being honest too, is not just like taking something that works, and when you find out something that works, just going with it and sticking with it, because
and hammering it.
Yeah, because then you can become stagnant as an artist, and it's important. I mean, it's been really important to me. I play a lot of gigs, you know. I probably play at least 250 gigs a year, you know, probably more. But I play like most nights of the week, and when we go on tour, we play almost every night. We try to play because we're trying to hit as many cities as we can and then make it back, you know, in one piece to our families as quickly as we can. So we play a lot of nights straight, and it's like we play a lot of the same songs every night, and we have to continue to evolve as musicians and continue to change the way we reflect on these songs and change the way that we sing them, because if we try to capture that same energy in that same moment when the songs came through when we first wrote them, it's never going to happen again, you know, and you'll get frustrated and you'll get stagnant if you do. So I think that's really part of finding your voice, is that you never really find it, you know, and you're constantly searching for a more perfect version of yourself. And I think that's kind of life, you know, that's kind of like a reflection of life too, because, you know, we have this life and our time here is so finite, but, you know, it can seem so long sometimes when we're stuck and when we're stagnant, you know. So it's all about growth, you know, and growing, and finding your voice is a whole part of that, finding your spiritual voice too, you know.
Guess it might have been easier for you, since you write your own lyrics. You could find yourself through your own words too.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that I don't know how a lot of people do it, but for me, I reached this point where Lyrically, I mean, every aspect of the music, I realized was a gift from a higher place, was a gift from a greater place outside of me. And, you know, I look at music as a meditation, and I'm very meditative when I'm writing music, too. It's kind of like if you think about somebody doing, like, you know, automatic writing or something where they just sort of, like, go into a meditative state and let their hand go. That's kind of like how music comes to me.
For real?
Yeah.
I mean, I hear people describe that. You know, they say that it's from someplace larger than me or outside. What?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think that music, at least the music that I make, and I know it's true for so many others, but, you know, it's positive music. It's intended to heal. It's intended to help people through, and I think most music is like that. Even when you think of, you know, heavy metal bands that are writing music that's really dark, it's like they're working through dark things in their life, and they're appealing to people that are also working through dark things in their lives, and it's good. It's a release, you know. So even sometimes, oh, I better turn off this. How I even turn off the sound on my phone.
I don't know either.
But I just turned it off.
It does stuff.
Yeah,
it keeps going.
I couldn't figure it out. But yeah, so you know, the dark and the light, all of that exists in music to heal and help people through. And so I think I sort of realized that pretty early on. I was writing a lot of music when I was in my teens. And a lot of it was just like, I think it was like really self-indulgent. And I had this idea of, like, you know, being a rock star and the dreams of, you know, kind of living the life of, you know, playing for stadiums and doing that kind of thing. And that was sort of what I imagined in my mind. And I was writing this music, and yet...
What were the songs about?
I mean, you know, they were about... I was probably just trying to imitate all of the bands that I liked. They were, you know, probably about, like, you know, teenage angst and you know, heartache and heartbreak and those kind of things and you know, psychedelic drugs and all of that kind of stuff. I wouldn't say I was even like quite at all concerned with politics when I was, like, you know, 15 or 16 years old. I think I don't know if I even was aware it existed, you know. But yeah, you know, I just think I was into that kind of, like, world of just deep emotions and relationships and kind of discovering who I was. And you know, I wrote all this music and I was never happy with it. Most of it I never shared with anybody because I was always, you know, kind of like looking into myself and it was so introspective and so all about me and kind of like egotistical too, you know.
You knew that at the time.
I don't think I knew it at the time. No, I don't think I knew it at the time, but I think that was the reason why I was unhappy with it.
Mm.
And then I started to, you know, as I grew a little older, I started to realize the connection between music and how it had healed me. And then I started to make music that that was more about that. And then as it started connecting with people, that was when I really realized what music was for. And that first time that I acknowledged that if I had been given a gift to share, to help people to grow, to help people to learn, to help people to heal, as well as myself first, you know, because the music comes through me first, then, you know, I should just make myself open to it. And I shouldn't try and hold on to it. I shouldn't try and have the idea that, you know, this is my song that I wrote. I'm going to take credit for it. You know, everybody kind of give me the accolades, give me the, you know, the applause. That, you know, I always just, you know, from that point on, I just kind of took any praise that anybody gave me and sort of just gave it to the source of the music. And that's what I still do. And I'm so thankful for it because it really has healed me and helped me through so much.
But you mean when that attitude has helped you?
Yeah, it has. I think it's helped me be successful in music too, because I just continue to, I mean, all I do really is just make the music and continue to help it to grow and help it to get bigger, and it does, you know, and we travel further and further and share it with more and more people, and I see how it affects people all over the world, and it's just the greatest blessing. And so to allow the music to come through is really simple when you realize that, and you just put your ego aside, and then, you know, at that point these songs started to come through, and then, you know, I'd finish a song and then I'd start playing it and sharing it, and then all of a sudden I would realize that it really was so personal, and even as I was writing it, as it was coming through, it was just about like everything that I needed to hear, that I needed to grow at that time, and the more that I would see it reflected through others, the more I would understand what it really meant to myself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so.
Okay, now wait, Mike. So you're saying that when people started responding to you and your music, that's when it kind of focused you a little bit more.
Yeah, it continues to, you know? It continues to. And the music itself is so, you know, it's so multidimensional that, you know, as I was saying before, with it kind of ever changing, it's kind of, I feel like it's always allowing people to receive it and express their own reflection of it, express their own idea of what it should be and what it means. And then we sort of receive that energy back and play it differently and feel it a little differently. And, you know, you get these kind of like different emotions when you're playing live and you're feeling the way people are feeling when you're playing these songs, and it's just like sometimes you just go, wow, I've never felt like this before. I've never felt this song feel like this before, and it's just cool. And then the next time you play it, that's like a part of it, you know, and that emotion, that feeling will always be in that song from that point on. You know what I mean?
Well, that's really neat. I mean, for an audience, yeah. You know, you feel like, wow, I can contribute to this song.
Yeah, I try and share that.
And the experience of it for you.
Yeah, I try and share that with our audience as much as I can, because I think it is important to know that, you know, you're not just some people in a crowd. You're not just like the next group of faces that you know, will be forgotten the next night. It's like once we share that together, it's always a part of all of us. And it, you know, and it does. And it helps the songs. It helps the music to be better, to be stronger. And I notice it because there's songs that we've been playing for, you know, some of them 10 years, you know, and some of them even longer. There's some songs that we've brought back from music that I did in a band, you know, 15 years ago or something. And then there's new songs, and I see the way that they develop, and they're not the same, you know, they're quite a bit stronger. They're quite a bit more powerful than they were, you know, 2 years ago or even 6 months ago. And then you see how they affect people, and you see how people get energized by them. And, you know, it's really amazing how it can grow like that and empower people as well.
What is it like then when you're writing a song, really?
Well, you know, it always happens kind of differently, but I guess one of two ways. I'll either sit down to write music, and that's another thing that happened when I made that sort of, I had that realization of just being a vessel, being open to letting music come through, and having the intention of using it to help people and help to heal. When I had that intention, you know, every time I would consciously sit down to write music, music would just start flowing through. And before that, you know, it didn't happen. like that. And there would be times when I'd sit down and it'd be frustrating because I'd be trying to write something and just trying to let something come out and trying to push something out of myself that maybe wasn't even there, you know? And then I would just get frustrated and nothing would come out. But ever since I had that realization, you know, it's just like a constant flow of ideas. And people sometimes say, oh yeah, do you sometimes get writer's block or how do you work through writer's block? But I just don't experience that ever. There's always
sit down with a guitar and just start playing or what?
Sometimes, yeah. Or sometimes I'll sit down at a piano or sometimes I'll just be walking down the street or sometimes I'll be driving in my car and, you know, something will just kind of pop into my head or sometimes I'll wake up out of a dream with a song that was half written in a dream and, you know, it's just it always happens differently, but, you know, there's kind of like, I mean, right now there's probably like, you know, anywhere from 30 to 50 songs that I'm working on, you know, that I've maybe been some of them been ideas that have been floating around in my head for a couple of years, and some of them just from this morning, you know. And sometimes I get the opportunity to work with other musicians. Right now I'm working on a project with one of my favorite musicians or some of my favorite musicians from a band called Groundation, and working on a project with them, with Marcus Urani and Paul Spina and Ryan Newman.
Where are these people playing?
Well, they're up in California. They're not really touring anymore, but they're a reggae band from California.
Oh. And
they've kind of toured all over the world, most famously in Europe. They have a really, really huge fan base in Europe. But one of my favorite bands ever, and I'm working with them on an EP now. So and that's really cool because it's kind of like all of this instrumental music that they put together and send to me, and then I've kind of got this full instrumental track, and it's totally different from you know, starting with just a melody and some chords, because there's so much of a vibe already there and so much of an intention, so much of a groove, and almost like a, you know, a really big foundation for a melody. So it's quite a bit different kind of writing to that. And it sort of forces you to do different things that you wouldn't normally come up with. Yeah.
So you'd be like parachuting into a bed that's already there.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I did an album called Ja Will Never Leave I Alone with a friend of mine, Ja Gumby, who's the bass player and one of the creative minds behind the local band Ukla the Mock. And his studio is the Father Sam studio. And I did an album like that with him, where we wrote a lot of stuff together. A lot of stuff was, you know, kind of he had a basis of a song, and I just wrote the lyrics and the melody over. And it was really cool doing that. It's just really, really kind of brought me in different directions that I didn't know I was capable of.
Mm-hmm.
It's always cool to collaborate with other musicians, especially ones that you've looked up to for so many years. That was like my experience with working with Gumby. I've looked up to him for many, many years, and the whole band, Ukla the Mock, and you know, learned a lot from them, from watching them, from listening to their music, and the same thing with Groundation. So it's kind of a great big dream come true for me to work with a lot of these musicians that I've just idolized for so long.
That's the most fun. That's what's good about getting good at what you do, right?
Yeah.
Would you say you're a reggae musician?
I would. I think, you know, this modern day music is hard to, you know, it's like how, you know, if I was to ask you, oh, what's your ethnicity? You'd probably say like, oh, I'm, you know, Filipino, Korean, Hawaiian, Irish. You know, I mean, it's like especially here in Hawaii, we have a lot of, you know, ethnicity, multicultural
hybrids.
Yeah. and it's beautiful. And I think that's the way that the world is moving towards, because as we travel more and more, we can go to different places of the world and we transplant ourselves and maybe move to France or maybe move to South Africa or maybe move to Samoa or, you know, and then we start families there and you know, so it's a beautiful thing. And the same thing is true with music because, you know, in my parents' day and age, all they had was, you know, what was prevalent in their town that they were from and what was on the mainstream radio. And they couldn't just go on the internet and check out some Cuban music or some flamenco or check out some, you know, classical music or check out some, you know, Delta blues or some Chicago blues or some New York bebop jazz or some, you know, it's just like the list of styles of music is endless. And growing up here, yeah, of course we grew up with a lot of reggae music, but I also have, you know, had access, and even more now nowadays have access to, you know, every kind of music that ever was, I guess, you know, I mean, there's I guess not that ever was, but, you know, every kind of music that ever was recorded. And so that's a lot of music. And I've been heavily into a lot of different styles of music. But reggae music, when I got really into roots reggae music, which is like the Jamaican reggae music, the foundational reggae music from the 70s, with bands like Bob Marley and the Gladiators and Israel Vibrations and the Congos and the Abyssinians. When I really got into that music, it's music that's heavily connected to Rastafari, to the movement of Rastafari, and to that idea of connectedness, interconnectedness, that one love that, of course, Bob Marley famously sang about, that we're all connected, that we are all one people, and that we're also a people that's being oppressed by a system that's seeking to control us, seeking to use us like cogs in a machine. And, you know, and the thing is that, you know, when I got into playing that kind of music, it was like an epiphany for me because it was like what I was always looking for. It was a message of positivity, of love, and also a message of, you know, think for yourself, rise up, don't be a part of a system that's controlling you. And so all of those elements, the spirituality present in the music, the meditative qualities of the music, just really resonated with me. And so at that point, I stopped making any other kind of music, and I just started making strictly reggae music. And that was a really good time for me because it sort of really awakened me to that connection that we can feel with people, with live music, and that connection that that we can feel with a higher spirit when we're making music, and to open ourselves up to that higher spirit, to open ourselves up to the idea that we are all connected, and that when we can make this music together, we can forget about ourselves and our personal problems, our personal desires, our personal goals and gains, and our idea of the way that we think things should be, and just remember that we are all part of something bigger. And so I took that music and just kind of made it a part of the core of who I am and what I want to express. And then from there, I got to a point where I realized, you know, I can keep this foundation and start reintroducing all of the styles of music that I sort of have been through and that have taught me so much and that I really still do love and that I'm still passionate about and still connected to. So I started reintroducing the R&B and the blues and the hip hop and the funk and the flamenco and the jazz and all of that stuff, and trying to just maintain that essence, that spiritual essence of Rastafari, of reggae music, like a thread through all kind of music, whether it was a song that didn't sound anything like a reggae song, or a song that was partially reggae, that was partially folk, that was partially, you know, funky and just kind of maintaining that thread of the spirit of reggae music through everything that I do. And that's I think, why if people ask me, I just say, yeah, I play reggae music, because it's easier than explaining that last 5-minute thing that I explained.
When, so just approximately,
yeah.
When did you discover reggae? About like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago?
Well, I mean, you know, I think reggae was a part of my life, all of my life here in Hawaii. But I think I really discovered my love for it, starting probably about 20 years ago now, in my later high school years. It was when I really started to discover, you know, artists more than just Bob Marley, who of course is like, you know, kind of a household name, I think in every corner of the world at this point. But, you know.
And so when did you start reintroducing some of the other elements then, do you think?
I think, you know, I played in a few bands, but it wasn't really until I started back on my solo project, which was probably about 10 years ago now, or maybe even longer, but at least 10 years ago now, I did my first solo gig, which, you know, all of my life as a professional musician, I just played in bands. And there came a time when you know, my wife said, hey, you know, you could probably do a gig, just a solo gig, and maybe just like, you know, it'd be just another gig to make a little more money and, you know, put a little more food on the table. We were struggling at the time just to kind of pay our bills and stuff. And she said, why don't you, you know, you have friends that do solo gigs. Why don't you try and reach out to them and see, you know, if they can help you get a solo gig. And I thought about it, and it was kind of like a scary thought to me for some reason. It was just something I'd never, ever considered doing. So I reached out to a friend of mine, Tavana, who I talked about earlier, who had been playing a lot of solo gigs around the scene for a while. And he said, oh, yeah, well, I'm actually like leaving town for a while, so I'm...
You got a solo gig?
So I got this solo gig at O'Toole's in Chinatown on Monday nights. And he said, you know, I've been looking for somebody to take over my spot while I'm gone. So I said, cool, I'll try it out. And I started there. And, you know,
she walked in with a guitar.
Yeah. And then by the time that he came back, they said, oh, we like Mike on Monday nights, so we're going to give you Tuesday nights, Tavana. And Mike could just keep the Monday nights. So I kept doing the Monday nights. And it was like, it was interesting because I didn't know what really to do, because I had been playing in such a big band that a lot of the music that I'd written, a lot of the reggae music that I'd written had been based on having big arrangements with horns and having a lot of breakdowns. And it was kind of really focused on that arrangement side of the music. And I realized I couldn't even play a lot of these songs just myself and a guitar. And so I started to kind of have to go back and like think about all the music that I'd played over the past and start to play some of that stuff again. And then I realized, this is really fun to play this music. And I started to reconnect with a lot of it. And then I started to write more music again like that because of that. And I realized that because I had been writing so much music, so dependent on the arrangement and so dependent on having a really cool horn section part and having a part that would build up to a great big musical breakdown, I had kind of forgotten about the importance of just writing a good song that could stand on its own, just a singer and a guitar. And I realized that, you know, I should kind of strip it down and start working on that again. So I started writing songs without any arrangement in mind, with just a guitar and a voice and, you know, some powerful lyrics and some good, strong melodies. And I think that's really when the music started to thrive again. And I went from that point on. And the first solo album that I recorded was released in 2012. So about 5 years after that. So it took me a while to kind of develop what I wanted to do, but, you know, and it's still developing.
2012. What was the name of that?
The Change I'm Seeking.
The Change I'm Seeking. Yeah. I haven't heard that or seen it. How can I find it?
Oh, it's on it's on iTunes. It's on. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on.
Do you still like it?
SoundCloud. Yeah, I do. I really do. I still play a lot of the songs from that album. You know, it's got a. It has a very raw quality to it, and.
Gee, what a great title!
Yeah, you know, it's just a. I mean, obviously, it's kind of derived from the, you know, one of my absolute, you know, heroes, Mahatma Gandhi, who wrote an incredible book, his autobiography about his own life, which really, really inspired me, and his very famous philosophy of be the change you want to see in the world. And I think that really is, you know, it comes from a line in the song Permanent Holiday, I will be the change I'm seeking, which is kind of a declaration of the change that I was going through in my life and realizing that, you know, I have children now. I have to be a good example. I have to, you know, people are starting to listen to this music. I have to be the example of the music that I'm and the ideas that I'm singing about in this music. And it's hard, you know, because when we write music, it's, you know, it's all of the idealistic things that we see in ourselves, that we see in others, that we see in the world, and all of the things that we want to accomplish, all those things in their most pure form come through in the music. So a lot of people think that, you know, these singers are these perfect people that you know live these perfect idealistic lives and talk the talk and walk the walk, and you know it's hard, it's difficult, so it's a constant struggle to be the change that I seek, but I'm always striving for it and always striving to be a good example for my children, for those that listen to the music, for everyone I come into contact with. And I think that, you know, having that, the aspect of that music and it being so multicultural, so, you know, multi-genre is important to me because I don't identify myself with any certain particular culture. I find beauty in the music of all cultures. I find beauty in the art, in the history of all cultures, and I think that that's really one of the things that we need to focus on now is looking to our cultural backgrounds and seeing, you know, some people get caught up in their culture and they focus and they think they need to repeat and relive every aspect of their culture, but there's a lot of things that about all of our cultures that we can leave behind, that we can change, that we can do better for our children. And sometimes we don't realize that we need to change them because we're so firm in protecting our culture and perpetuating it. But there on the positive side of that, there are beautiful aspects to all of our culture, to the Hawaiian culture here we have. That should be remembered, that should be honored, that should be perpetuated, and up until recently we're being lost, and we've had a beautiful resurgence of that here at home, and I think it's important also to look to other cultures and to look to what we can do and how we can grow, how we can change as one world culture. And we really are one big world culture now. And there's so much division. And I think that the mainstream media and the entertainment industry, and a lot of it is designed to divide us and designed to really magnify the negative aspects of our cultures and what keeps us separated rather than rejoice and triumph over the beautiful aspects of our culture that can connect us, that can expand beyond just one race, one culture, one individual. And I think that, you know, seeing those connections together and growing, you know, outside of the oppression of those industries can really help us to come together and help us to grow and help us to move forward in these you know, troubling times of division, of separation that we're experiencing now.
Do you really think there's something about music that can almost like break us down and then reformulate us and into better? I mean, because I look at your live show, Mike, and it's almost evangelical. It's not like you're a regular music, you know, deal where a star stands up and presents something.
I do think so. I think, you know, music historically has been, you know, the bringers of truth, have been the traveling, you know, the troubadours, the ones who you know, have traveled around and brought the true tales of what's happening in the world, internationally or just nationally or just within community. And you know, there's kind of a history of you know, governmental oppression and sort of the oppression of many regimes throughout the history, the recorded history of time. And
has there ever been music oppression?
Has there ever been music oppression? Well, currently there is quite a bit of music oppression. If you turn on the radio and tune to your top 40 radio station, you're gonna find you know, a prevalence of musical oppression. I think that's you know, that's just as you know, the system controls every aspect of, you know, education, of art. It also controls music in an effort to control people, because you have mainstream music that is really kind of dumbed down for the masses, and you look more and more at popular music, and the modern popular music is so simplified and it's so repetitive. And it's so shallow and devoid of any meaning and any true honesty that, you know, it really does. I think it makes people think less, because music traditionally has been about evoking emotion. And I think if you have music with kind of plastic emotion in it, fake emotion, then you are sort of tricking people into thinking that they're feeling something when, you know, they're sort of having some sort of like surrogate emotion, and it's coming from the music, and it's so mainstreamed now, and it's kind of produced, and a lot of the music that's popular is really, you know, produced by a sort of machine, you know, a kind of, you know, I think in the recent years there's been a great kind of reforming of the way that record labels work, the way that radio stations work. I mean, there's one massive corporation that owns just about every radio station in this entire country. It's kind of insane, you know?
Right.
And they just control what's on every major radio station. And it's, I mean, thank God that we have things like, you know, SoundCloud and YouTube and TuneCore and CD Baby and these elements of music that can forego contracts with record labels and forego traditional marketing, to where we can put a song on YouTube and reach millions of people without ever having to pay for it. And it's, thank God for that, because without things like that, a musician like myself would never, ever be signed to a record label, you know.
What do you make of Permanent Holiday?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, for me, it's
how many
just,
views now?
I think it's definitely over 10 million views. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I remember when we put that video up and it got, you
when
know,
did it go up? 20.
It's I think 3 years ago now.
Years? Yeah. Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow, Mike.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we first put it up, we were excited when it got like, you know, 5,000 views. And it was kind of like, wow, 5,000 people have seen this thing. And then, you know, it hit some of those viral sites like Reddit and just somehow got picked up on those things and people talked about it and somehow it just blew up. And then one day, you know, it went from like a few hundred thousand views to a couple million in over the course of a day or two. And it was like, wow, you know.
Did that change your life?
I mean, everything changes your life. You know, I think I can definitely say without that song, probably wouldn't be touring in all the places that we've toured to, you know, but it's just one of those things that, you know, you write a song and you don't, it's like any other song. You don't really realize, wow, this might be the song that a lot of people connect with, or, you know, these elements fall into place that people, you know, just attach
onto.
You
were surprised?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I'm still surprised, you know. I'm surprised when I go to, you know, a country like Poland or Portugal and, you know, or Aotearoa, and like everybody knows the words to your songs, and it's like, wow, it's amazing how far, you know.
Wild.
And I mean, we didn't even grow up with this technology, and it's been such a, you know, I was talking to my son, you know, recently, and he's like, you know, I was telling him, yeah, you know, when you look up a show on Netflix, you know, we used to have to watch these things called commercials that, like, you know, and you couldn't find your favorite show on, or like you could, you know, and he was like, yeah, but then you could just watch it on your iPad. I was like, no, we didn't have iPads. We didn't have cell phones. You know, it's like, it's kind of crazy how, you know, for the kids growing up now, they're just used to all this technology, and it's happened so quickly in our lifetimes that we remember a time when we had none of this. And we can remember a time, you know, even 10 years ago, where what we're doing now just wouldn't have even worked.
Right.
It would have been impossible. So just having all these elements, it's like there are aspects of technology that are so good, that are so positive, and it's just the idea that we need to sort of, you know, self-regulate and control ourselves. And I think, you know, it's the aspects of it that are bad are the ones that seek to overstimulate us and control us and also our own, you know, seemingly inability to not control our lust and our greed and our overconsumption and our addiction
again.
And yeah, it's these themes that kind of keep coming up in the music and life. You know, it's,
you know what's weird about Permanent Holiday is it seems like it's going to be this brainless, you know, beach summer thing, but it's really not. It's got a meaning to it know people are absorbing when they bop around to this thing.
Right. I always try and explain to people, you know, that being on a permanent holiday isn't about not working, because I work really hard, and a lot of nights I don't get much sleep, and I, you know, I try to be a good father, and I wake up in the morning, you know, and take my kids to school, even if I was just went to bed a couple hours before, and then I get back to work, and I, you know, I work pretty hard at this music, and there's a lot of aspects of it that probably nobody could even imagine that we have to take care of, and the thing is, it's not. But the thing is, I'm still on a permanent holiday, you know, because I don't work for a corporation. I don't work for a system that I don't believe in. You know, I work towards something that I know is helping people, and I put my energy into something that I know is helping people. And somehow my path has led me to that point where it can sustain me and sustain my family. And I'm, you know, and I'm so thankful for that. And there's no, like, I guess there's no secret formula to getting to that point. But I think that first it takes a leap of faith. And I think everybody out there knows that there's something that they could be doing, that they wish they were doing, that they know could help people and they know could make a difference, and they also know could sustain their lives and be sustainable. And I think that for the most part, you know, probably 99% of people are afraid to quit their job that they're, you know, is their career that they've been working for the last 10 years or 15 years or 30 years or 50 years and, you know, just throw caution to the wind and go after what they know they really truly should be doing or know they truly want to be doing, what they need to be doing. And they have a vision for it, and yet they're afraid to do those scary things, to take those scary steps where, you know, you step out into the unknown and you don't know, man, am I going to be able to pay my rent this month? Am I going to be able to put food on the table? And sometimes, you know, you just have to realize that, you know, if I'm working, you know, a 9-to-5 job at the bank or at the gas station or at the grocery store or whatever, you know, doing this thing for, I've been doing it for so long and you know, I'm comfortable in it. It pays my bills, but I know I should be doing something better. But then I don't know that if I quit this job that I'll ever be able to go back or I'll make it doing whatever it is I know I should be doing. You know, it's a scary thing, but I think that in this life, it's all about those tests, and that if we do take those leaps of faith, like at a certain point in my life I had to, we're always rewarded and we're always taken care of and we're always provided for. And if you could look back in your life, you can see that you've always been provided for and that your path has led you to this point, and that, you know, obviously you've been taken care of and you've had everything you need because you're not dead, right? And, you know, you still have something to give and you still have something to share, and there's no time that's better than now, you know? And you can wait and wait and wait, but the longer that you wait, the further that dream gets away from you and the further that vision that gets from being a reality. And you get further and further entrenched in the idea that you can't do it. And you subconsciously tell yourself, by not doing it every day, you subconsciously tell yourself a little bit more and more that you're not capable or that it's never going to happen. And sometimes it's just all about breaking that trance that you're in and taking that step and moving forward. And, you know, that, what can I say? That's really, I know it's pretty vague, but that's what every good decision in my life has been based on, and based on knowing that I don't know exactly how it's going to turn out, but I know that if I have good intentions, that I move forward and that I know it'll help people, that I know it'll help myself to be a better person, then I just make the decision and do it. And even though sometimes it seems scary to make these decisions, it's usually, I mean, it almost always works out for the best. And even when it doesn't seem to work out for the best, you'll look back later and realize that you learned something that was invaluable in all aspects of your life, you know, from that experience. So,
damn, you're talking to me. And everybody else is going to be saying that too.
Well, it's good. You know, sometimes we, that's what we're here for, each other, right? To give each other wake up calls if it resounds, if what I said resounds in you, it's only because you're really just saying it to yourself, and I'm just a reflection of what you're saying to yourself. And if you said it to me, I'd realize the same thing. You know, anytime you realize something because of something somebody tells you, it's only because they're just a reflection of what you already know.
Damn.
You got me talking, you know. I'll talk for hours if you get me talking.
Is there something you could play or maybe would
sure.
like to?
I'd love to, yeah. Yeah. So, this is a tune that I, that I like to share. I think it's one of the songs that a lot of people have kind of revealed to me has helped them in a powerful way in their lives. So sometimes if I just have one song to share, it's this one. And I think it really resonates with a lot of people because it's about life. It's about all the aspects of life, the good and the bad and the beginning and the end. And I wrote it at a time when my youngest son had just been born. And it was also at a time where recently my grandpa had passed away, and I'd really kind of been closest to him in the last years of his life because he had a stroke, and a lot of my family had moved to the mainland, so I was really the one that was here and sort of personally charged with helping him out and helping my grandma out, you know, in their needs in the last 5 years of his life. And so I kind of became close to him in a different way than anybody else had because, you know, he was dealing with being in a wheelchair and not being able to talk a lot, not being able to express himself, and helping him through all of that. And he's a preacher, you know, he's a pastor. He lived his whole life helping people, and an amazing musician, amazing gospel musician. And he helped people all his life. And up until right when he had his stroke, you know, he worked for First Chinese Church, and he was the pastor that went around to the people who were infirmed, who couldn't leave their houses, and he would minister to them and bring them, you know, joy and peace in a time where they couldn't even, you know, a lot of them couldn't get out of bed. And so he was an amazing man. But then all of a sudden he went from being, you know, this strong figure in the community to someone who just couldn't even help himself in a lot of ways. And so it was really frustrating for him. And you know, we had to help him through that. And so I got really close to him in that way, which was so different and so humbling. And so it really affected me when he passed. And I was sort of reflecting on that, reflecting on life, reflecting on what we think about when we're at the end, what we think about when we're at the beginning, you know, the wonder of it all, and how it's kind of the same in a lot of ways. And then I also, right around that time, got a call from a friend, and his younger sister had passed away. She was only 18 years old, I believe. And, you know, it was tough to see her unexpectedly pass, and I didn't even know her. She was a sister of my friend, and I just he asked me to come and play music at her memorial service, and it was really kind of strange to see and enlightening to see how their whole community came together and how they were grieving and how it was so much different than losing my grandpa, because, you know, sometimes things like that happen unexpectedly, and you're 18 years old and you're going along and having the time of your life, and then something happens and, you know, this body is over and you're on to the next life, and we're left here in this life dealing with it and wondering why and you know, having a hard time knowing that we're not going to see you again in this life. And it's really strange how life works like that, and it's something that we have to come to terms with, that we all have to come to terms with at some point or another in our lives. And so, you know, I was thinking about that, and I was on my way to that memorial service, and all of these lyrics of this song just started coming through, and this melody and the idea of the song started coming through, and over the next few days it just kind of like came pouring out, and it was really what I needed to deal with what I was going through. And a lot of people have come to me and told me that it's helped them through similar passages in their life. And it's just amazing to know that a piece of music can be so helpful and can really help, you know, bring out the tears. It can help bring the healing, can help you through, help you understand what it all means, just if only just a little bit. So I'd love to share the song. It's a tune called No Regrets. Thank you. boundless, time will pass into the past. So if you're happy, then make each moment last. Don't hold nothing back. And if you're suffering, remember it won't last. Get over it fast. Get back to living and giving love. Oh, this life is just a test. I will remember, I will remember, this life ain't over yet. So please remember not to forget, a newborn baby's cry, their very first tears, they are so hopeful, and great-grandfathers die. After many years, it is a circle, oh, teenagers find love. And screw it all up, they are so fearful, yet somehow it invincible all arm. Oh, this life is not a curse, no, but there will be hard times and it will get worse, but always do your best and always remember that you are blessed. So much.
We've done so well. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. I know I've done most of the talking. Sorry.
Are there any projects you want to tell us about? And where can we see you probably next? Wednesdays are regulars for you or not?
Yeah, well, I play actually right around the corner from here at Hawaiian Brian's. I do my solo show still on Mondays. Actually, you know, we talked about doing my solo show on Mondays. So I've kind of from going from that big band and breaking it down to a solo act on those Monday nights so many years ago, I've come back around and I still maintain those Monday nights solo and play at Hawaiian Brian's.
Oh, at Hawaiian Brian's.
Mm-hmm, on Monday nights solo. And I kind of have maintained that because I feel like once I discovered that, I felt like it was kind of this cool and liberating thing to be able to play on my own and to be able to know that, you know, if it was bad, nobody else was accountable. And if it was good, then, you know, it meant that I was doing something right and that I should continue. And so
Do you do it in the same room?
No, it's in the studio in Hawaiian Brian's.
The one so as you to as the you right walk as you into walk the right. In. Oh, mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah, so it's a nice
so
intimate
you're there
Monday
on Mondays.
Night. Yeah.
Okay.
And then Wednesday nights we're there in the big room in Crossroads with my band, The Full Circle, which is named The Full Circle. One of the reasons for it being, of course, that I came from a big band and then broke it down to one person and then slowly reintroduced the members and then came around full circle to a full electric band again with a full drum set and electric guitar and horn section and everything. So
this is such great sonic things you do too.
Yeah,
it's
a really
so
amazing,
fun.
Really amazing band. Just kind of handpicked from all of the musicians that I worked with over the years and really handpicked from, you know, this mentality that, you know, I've discovered over the years and being in many bands is that in a band there's really two criteria that you have to have to make it work. You have to be able to be musically inspired by somebody and you have to also be able to be spiritually inspired by somebody. You have to know that, you know, you can walk on stage and not have negative energy with them and know that maybe that they're hiding the way that they're feeling from you or, you know, everything has to be open. So I really handpicked these musicians from musicians that I knew would be amazing players that would constantly inspire me musically, that I would never write anything that I would think, oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to play that. Or, you know, it's like I know these guys can play anything that I come up with. You
Who
know?
Are they?
Well, the drummer is the musician that I've been collaborating with the most is, you know, a longtime best friend of mine, Sam Eitz, on the drums.
A last name is what?
Well, his last name is Gonzalves, so Sam Gonzalves, but he goes by Sam Eitz. And he plays drums.
You know what? I'm going to probably write this.
Okay.
So how do you spell that?
I-T-E-S.
Sam Eitz, okay.
Yeah.
Z-A-L-V-E-S. Or just leave that out.
Yeah, no, you can put it, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
And then on the bass is John Hawes, who's a really stellar bass player. He plays a lot of different bands. He plays bass for Henry Capono, plays for Jake Shimabukuro a lot of the time.
A-A-S, yeah?
H-A-W-E-S.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Not like the avocado.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a really, really stellar bass player. And then on the keys, Keith Sukamaki. So that's T-S-U-K-A-M-A-K.
Okay. Yeah. Sukamaki.
Sukamaki, yeah. And I've been playing with him for a long time as well. He's just a outstanding rhythm player and an outstanding musician, multi-instrumentalist. And on the horns, Reggie Padilla, saxophone, and he also plays piano in the group. He's mainly plays sax, but he does play some piano. He's another outstanding musician. He currently is not, but he was the head of the jazz department at UH, amazing jazz musician, and he also has his own solo albums, which are just phenomenal.
I saw him last at a Vespers.
Mm-hmm, yeah, he does the jazz Vespers, and John also plays the bass there.
Oh,
so,
he does?
Yeah, John's
oh, okay.
The bass player. And then Arthur Davis on the trombone, who also has his own solo project, and he's just an amazing He's the youngest guy in the group.
Yeah, he's really good.
But he's just a fantastic trombonist. And actually was originally, we met him because he was one of Reggie's students at UH. And, you know, when it came time to record the album Love Will Find a Way, Reggie had been working with for a while, and we've been working with different musicians. And I said, oh, who should we use on the trombone? And he said, oh, you know, well, he's pretty young, but there's this student of mine, Arthur, who's just really blossomed. And I thought, okay, well, we'll try him out. And he came in the studio, and we were just like, oh, my God, this guy's just, I mean, he does some pretty mind-boggling stuff on the trombone. He's just a fantastic, fantastic musician and an awesome person. So,
neat.
Yeah, and so it's great. It's really a phenomenal band.
Which, so that was your most recent? Love Will Find a Way is your...
Actually, we released one after that with the same musicians called Love Overflowing, which was kind of a companion to that Love Will Find a Way. And so now we're... And both of those albums were kind of recorded before we had formed this band, really, or in the early year, mm-hmm. early days of forming this band. And so we didn't really know what we wanted to sound like as a band, and we went in as a rhythm section and recorded the basic tracks, and then I sort of wrote the horn lines after the fact and went in. And so, you know, now we've been playing as a band together, and we really function as a unit, and we've come together and kind of function with one heart and one mind and really feel each other and are so together dynamically. So we're really excited to be recording our next album. It's going to be kind of a longer, epic album. We haven't really released the title of it yet. It's still in the early stages.
Lee said it was an EP. I didn't know it was an epic.
Yeah. No, yeah, EPIC is short for EP, I guess. You missed the second two letters. No, it's definitely not going to be an EP, far from it. It's going to be a lot of songs, but it's going to be the first album that I've ever recorded where we go in as a band and record everything live, like in the old days, the way it used to be, you know, and I think we have that dynamic together, and it's going to be an exciting project, and all the music that we're rehearsing for the album, we've started to play a lot of it live so we can really get the feeling of that reflection that we talked about. So we really know what the songs are about before we go into the studio, and we have a good idea of the way that we want the energy to feel and to try and capture mm-hmm. that in the studio. I've never really captured that, you know, that live energy, that feeling that you get when you're really connected with each other. So we're really excited to do that on this upcoming album. It's going to take some time, but
is that this year you're working on it?
Yeah, we're working on it now. I mean, we're in the rehearsal stages. We went into the studio and recorded some stuff, but we sort of realized that we need to kind of pull back and really get all the material together so that we could go in, take a chunk of time in the studio and just do it all at once so that it could feel like a project that was done as a whole rather than go in, record some songs, you know, work, do our gigs, maybe go in a couple weeks later, do some more work. I think we've gotten to the point now where we want to take a little chunk of time and just devote it to making this album and making it feel like a project that's really centered and grounded and whole, you know?
Yeah, I can see it being different that way.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It already feels much different the way that we're approaching it, so I'm really excited about it.
All right. We'll come and see you at your places.
Cool.
Then.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You know, wait, now, Love is your real name, not your real name.
Love is my real name, yeah.
You were born with this name, Mike Love?
I was actually born with the name Loveless. And so my family, the origin of my name, of my family name is... that I guess it was a tailor's name, so it used to be Lovelace.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then I guess in translation it got changed to Loveless over the years. And so, you know, like I always felt like it didn't fit me or didn't fit my family because I have a really loving family, you know. And so when it came time to pass my name on to my children, I realized that out of all of my sister and my cousins, everybody in my whole entire family, I was the only male to carry on the name. So I legally changed my name to Love because that's what everybody knew me as forever. That's just what my friends always called me, is Mike Love, you know? And everybody always knew me as, because, you know, everybody knew that I wasn't loveless, you know, so.
Well, make it official.
Yeah, so I changed my name legally eventually to pass that on to my children. So that's my legal name, yeah.
Have you got two sons then?
I have three sons and one daughter. Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah. Cool. What's your wife's name?
Kendra.
Kendra?
Yeah.
Does she come to your gigs much? Or?
She mostly stays home with the family, but when it's like something special, she'll come out. But yeah, you know, just.
How old are they anyway,
the
kids?
Well, they're 21. My sons are 21, 14, and 6, and my daughter's 17.
Do they like your music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. They're, you know, they're funny. I mean, they definitely do. They have their certain favorite songs and stuff, but they're awesome. They're cool kids.
Oh, man. It must be so hard to, you know, be on tour so much, huh?
Yeah, it is hard. But, you know, it's like this balance.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, I used to play when I was home. I used to kind of, like, you know, hammer my head against the wall and play, like, sometimes, like, you know, even, like, 10 gigs a week, where I'd be playing every single night.
Yeah.
And some days, like, 3 gigs in a day, and just, like, trying to take every gig I could and make, you know, $100 here, $100 there, and just, like, you know, and then going out to tour. You know, it's like a balance, because there's so much more expansion of the reach of the music, and also we make more money than when we just stay at home and play all these regular gigs, because we're going out and doing bigger shows in like bigger cities and stuff. So it kind of allowed me to come home and go, okay, you know, maybe I'm like gonna do 4 gigs a week instead of 7, and have.
When you are home.
Yeah,
so you
when
have
I'm home,
more time
so I have
when you're
more
home.
Time when I'm home, exactly.
Oh.
So it's kind of cool. And, you know, and even when I was playing that much, it's still like, you know, it's even playing gigs now, it's great, because I, you know, I spend all day with my family, and then, you know, I'll go out maybe at bedtime or sometimes after bedtime, and, you know, do my gig, and then I wake up in the morning and take them to school. Yeah, so so it's cool, because most of the people that I know, even that play music, still work a day job, and then they, you know, or a lot of my friends, they work a day job and they have kids, and then they, you know, you come home at 5 in the afternoon and you got like 2 hours before bedtime, and you're already exhausted from working all day, so it's kind of like, what energy do you have left for your kids? So it's really an amazing blessing to be able to play music and to be able to do what I do and have it sustain my family and have so much, like, really quality time with them.
Yeah.
It's hard being away, but I still feel like I'm afforded, like, so much more quality time than really anybody I know with my kids, you know? Yeah.
Just,
you know,
got it working.
It's got me working.
Okay.
I just follow along with where I'm guided, you know? Cool. Thank you so much.
Oh,
thanks for having us.
Thank you.